Theater of the Air.
Shell South Africa and Shell dealers throughout the Republic take pleasure in presenting Diplomatic Venture by Humbert Wilson. The play has been specially adapted and produced by Michael Silver for Shell.
Make for the lights. Take a look at the nightlife. Go to town. Get in. Get into the swing. Step out with a crowd. Get places with Super Shell. With confidence, with pleasure. For the life you like, for the action you want, pull in at the Shell sign. There's where the enjoyment starts. So get set. Go well. Go well, go Shell. That's the one to get you to the fun. Shell.
And now, Diplomatic Venture by Humbert Wilson.
I said to Mussolini,
I can't hear with this thing going, dear.
I said, do you remember what I said to Mussolini?
Oh, do you mean about the corsets?
No, the Third Locarno Pact.
Oh, I don't know about that. I simply remember that when he was walking down the stairs with Sir Evan, he said to you, you have a soldierly figure, do you wear corsets? And you said, no, Excellency, and he said, neither do I. Then the guard saluted, and he saluted, and you sort of raised your top hat.
No, that's just come back to me. What a lot a man does forget.
He did wear corsets all the same.
Who wore corsets?
Mussolini did, or so your mother says. What a silly, fat, posturing show-off he was. I never thought him sinister like that beast Hitler.
He deceived you all with his new robes and his silly uniform.
Possibly, I suppose he did. Anyway, it was my first senior post after your mother and I got married. So I look back on the British Embassy in Rome with a certain amount of affection.
I see you've got the shopping list in your hand, dear.
Yes, Mummy.
You won't forget your father's tobacco.
As if I would. Bye.
How lucky we are.
In Sally? Yes, indeed.
How long ago it all is. Father telling us we mustn't marry.
I remember it well. Calling me a penniless junior member of the diplomatic corps. But it all turned out right in the end, didn't it?
Yes, love, it did. But we had to wait 10 long years until you got your posting.
And now we have to exist on the charity of my daughter and my son-in-law. Mary, what's going to become of us?
Darling, don't use words like charity. You'll make a fortune with your book and the balance of payments will be restored.
Looking back on my career, I see how badly I failed. We all failed in everything. We failed to stop World War II. We failed in India. We failed in Africa.
It wasn't your fault. You were...
No, I was never principal or... Never mind. I was loyal to Sir Benedict and I believed in him. I remember the ragged men on the hunger marches and the significant fact that so many of them were young, so many of them destined to drive tanks or man submarines. And now they're old like us, and the young have no messages anymore. Students tearing up pavements, rioting all over the place.
Oh, Harold, leave them alone. It's the privilege of the young to be angry.
I suppose so. But I can't see them buying the memoirs of a failed diplomat somehow. Or anybody else buying them, if it comes to that. And yet Sir Benedict was a very great man.
Hello, sir. How are you, Dad? And how's my favorite mother-in-law since this morning?
Well, thank you, Charles. How did you get on, dear?
It's all in the bag. I'm to write 3 numbers for the show.
Have you decided on the title yet?
Yes, The Passionate Eskimo. Mm-hmm.
extraordinary title. 4 years of the Conservatoire of Music, a symphony, a modern opera to your credit, and you have to write music for passion among the icebergs.
Great, Dad, great.
I beg your pardon.
I'll tell Sam, it's a much better title.
What's it all about, dear?
There's this lone woman flyer who has to land on an ice float.
Original.
Yes, I know, but the money's good. I'll go and put on something less stunning, as the fashion experts would have it.
I'll give you a shout when Sally comes.
That's fine, I can do with a cup, huh?
We're lucky in our son-in-law, too.
Yes, we are. But I wish we didn't have to...
Now, Harold.
It's no use saying now, Harold. I hadn't gambled on those chicken farms and residential hotels. Every penny of our capital...
We were unfortunate, that's all. We still have your pension.
Enough to keep us in beer, China tea, and postage stamps. I presume a diplomat was intended to steal the spoons from various embassies.
Why don't you work on your book, dear? Sally will be there.
It's finished.
But that's wonderful.
What's wonderful?
Harold's book, his memoirs. It's finished.
Oh, good. Is it ready to go to the publisher?
No, I'm in the process of repolishing. In a few weeks...
What will it say in a few weeks that it doesn't say now?
It will say it rather better.
Oh, that's what I'm afraid of.
Of what will you be afraid?
Of it being too well polished. Too good, in fact. As your son-in-law, who has a great deal of affection for you, may I speak plainly?
Don't you think we ought to postpone this?
No, Mary. What do you feel you ought to say, Charles?
Well, that you're on your last and major battle. That you've got your back to the wall and they're coming at you. As a diplomat, you know how to duck and weave and dodge, but this modern world, 1968, will pin you and break you. And that's not going to happen, is it?
It's something I try not to think about.
Forgive me, you should. You've got a counterattack.
A policy of counter-aggression.
That's it. No appeasement.
For that, one has to negotiate from a position of strength.
Oh, there it is, lying on that table. Your strength. Launch your book at the heads of the enemy.
You're a good fellow, Charles. You're deliberately trying to provoke me in order to bring me out of my shell of failure.
Oh, Harold, how can you call yourself a failure?
Well, I can hear the car.
Sally's back. I'll go and make the tea.
Well, Mother's right, you know. You shouldn't use the word failure.
Why not? I've failed at everything, from trying to stop a war to persuading chickens to lay eggs economically. I know now that success is not in me, and I frankly confess to being afraid for Mary's and my last remaining years.
Well, who isn't afraid of the future? Look at me. If you go down, you'll go down with the guns firing and the flag at the masthead and the bands playing and the captain tall and grave saluting his opponents. You're made in that sort of mold. That's why you've battled since you retired. Oh, you failed in the minor skirmishes, hotels and chicken farms, but you're the type who loses every battle except the last. And then victory's yours. And the battle of the manuscripts. May I read a chapter, sir?
If you wish. Charles, don't you realize that this book is about Sir Benedict Carpenter, a man of great intellectual majesty and diplomatic stature?
So what?
The masses have never heard of him. Until you and Sally kindly offered us hospitality, you had never heard of him either. Now admit it.
All right. But when you were my age, it was a big name. We'll sell him to the public all over again. What's the theme?
I don't know that it has a theme. Except it's written with great solemnity about a man who never succeeded in anything he touched. A man who never said a foolish thing, nor ever did a wise one, to quote.
But what about all this intellectual majesty?
I think you'd better read it, my boy. Oh, there's no sign of tea. I shall walk for a time in the garden. I'm disturbed. And when Sir Benedict was disturbed, he walked in the garden.
Oh, what disturbed him?
Hitler and indigestion. One usually calls the other. I'll see you at tea.
Sir Benedict's room at the Clarion was simple in the extreme. He was not addicted to luxury. I saw upon his dressing table only two soiled collars, a pair of rubber bands which he'd used to keep the long woolen underdrawers then fashionable taut upon his calves, and his asthma inhaler. His false teeth and cigars were on the bedside table.
Hello, darling.
Huh?
Where's
Daddy? Hello. Taking a walk in the garden.
Dear, that means he's upset. What are you reading?
His book.
Oh, poor Daddy, he's been working on it for years.
I suppose it's a good thing that he's got something to keep him occupied. I hate to think what he'll do when it's finished.
Do? Attend literary luncheons. The eminent diplomat turned author, unveiling statues, signing autographs.
Oh, it isn't fair to laugh at him. Particularly as he's so fond of you.
And I of him. But seriously, though, this book's got something. I don't know quite what it is. But it's like the Limburger cheese or brandy or cigar smoke in an old-fashioned club.
You mean it stinks?
No, my darling, I don't mean it stinks. It has bite, a flavour. It reads sort of oldie-worldy, but it isn't. He's poking fun at everyone, including himself.
Charles, don't encourage Father. Supposing it is published, and it's a failure, don't you realize what it'll do to him and to Mummy?
Ah, you're selling your parents short. They don't come like Harold and Mary anymore. They're as calm and courageous in failure as they'd be modest and self-effacing with success. I love those two.
And I love you. Oh, you're a sweet, generous, talented...
Talented? That's a love.
Oh, don't worry, darling. Everything's going to be all right. I know it will. We'll see it through. The four of us.
Chip of the old block. Yes, we'll see it through. Sally, that book. Now, I've skimmed through odd passages here and there. Honestly, darling, I'm convinced it'll sell. It's really funny. You see, the critics will lap it up. I know. Alan Watts. He's always saying he owes me a good turn. Well, now he can repay it. Oh, you remember Alan, darling. He went into his father's publishing business.
You can't do this. Daddy was a diplomat, not a writer. Oh, it's all very well for you to laugh at his memoirs, but they mean so much to him. Supposing your friend sent it back, as he's almost sure to.
But he won't.
Come on, Sally. Help me set the table for tea.
All right, Mummy.
Where is tea?
Any minute now, darling.
I see you've been reading my memoirs, Charles.
Yes, sir. I think it's great.
Oh, come, Charles. You can't pretend you've read it all.
I've read enough to convince me that our troubles are over.
Are they, my boy? Are they? I hope so, for your sake and Sally's. Poverty becomes corrosive. It eats into one's soul, destroys one's power to dream. You know, Charles, when I was with the diplomatic corps, we never had much time to dream. We thought we were hard, practical realists. I suppose we were. It's since I retired that I've allowed my imagination to run riot.
By writing your memoirs, sir?
Anyway, I looked back and wrote as I saw people and incidents at the time. Things would have been vastly different if I'd had the drive. No, that's cheating. The ability to become head of the department. But I didn't. And so here I am in the twilight of my years, living on my dreams and your charity.
Listen to the sound of Le Mans. The drama of the Daytona 24 Hour. The Brands Hatch 500 Mile. The Monaco Grand Prix. These are some of the great motor races of the world.
Here, on these engine-punishing endurance tracks, here a motor oil must give the ultimate in lubrication. And that's why so many world champion drivers like Graham Hill and Dennis Hulme rely on Shell motor oil.
From the knowledge, from the experience gained on the great racetracks of the world, Shell has developed a motor oil for you, the motorist. An oil to give you the best in engine protection. Shell Super Motor Oil.
Most world championship races are won on Shell.
Reason enough for using Shell Super Motor Oil in your car?
Mummy, I love this T-shirt. I can remember loving it when I was a small child.
We got it before you were born.
I bet there isn't another tablecloth like this in the whole world.
Oh, millions, I should think. We got it in Tokyo when we were attached to the embassy.
When was that, Mummy?
In 1936. Things were very tense because of the Sino-Japanese situation.
It all sounds so exciting and wonderful.
Oh, I expect it's very much the same today, you know. Central figures have changed, that's all. And of course, jet aircraft and international telephones have speeded the whole process. I like Japan. It's a wonderful place.
Mummy, why didn't Daddy become an ambassador? Wasn't he clever enough?
Well, there are only so many ambassadors, you know. Everybody can't get the job.
I bet they shouldered him out of the way.
No good ambassadorial material would let itself be shouldered. No. Your father had too keen a sense of humor. It didn't make him liked. Sir Benedict always used him, but never liked him.
But Daddy worships him.
Does he?
I wonder.
What do you wonder, dear?
Whether I shall go on loving Charles. As much as you still love Daddy.
You will. We're both very lucky having husbands we can believe in.
Oh, it will be wonderful if Daddy's book is a success.
If we can persuade him to publish it, it might well be. Of course, he can't tell all the things he did, or that some of Sir Benedict's brighter speeches were really your father's.
Ah, first round of the battle's been won. Where's the distinguished author? Oh. The House of Watson Hudson will publish the book.
No! Wonderful news.
That distinguished author, known to us personally, has just scribbled on the manuscript the words Diplomatic Venture, and that's what they propose to call it, Diplomatic Venture.
It's a nice title.
Oh, there's more to come. They're suggesting a first print of 5,000 copies and have offered an advance of £250.
£250? Mm-hmm. Is that a good offer?
Yes, Mother, it is, and I'd advise him to accept it.
Do they really think it's such a good book?
Their principal reader, as well as my friend Alan, raved about it. They're going to do some way-out advance publicity. Guess what they're putting on the cover?
What?
A picture of your father seated in his study, and behind him, a huge drawing of a laughing clown.
Laughing clown? But I don't understand.
Oh, we don't want the public to think it's just another stuffy book filled with a lot of historical detail as to what one prime minister said to another. They're going to emphasize the funny side of diplomatic life. You know, see the Foreign Office with the lid off. Sir Percival Watson loses his pants in audience with the Maharaja of Who's It. That sort of thing.
There's nothing like that in the book, Charles. It's not that sort of book at all. It's not meant to be funny.
Well, whether it's meant to be or not, Mother, it is. If the public laugh, the battle's won. Look, if the book is read in a kind of stony silence, then the whole thing's a flop.
It's supposed to be a study of 20 years of diplomacy. If people are going to laugh at Harold, then it shouldn't be published at all.
Oh, but, Mother, they won't be laughing at him, but with him. Have you read the manuscript?
No, but Harold has read bits of it, too.
Then let me show you what the chief reader of the publisher says. Wait a minute. Yes, here we are. I quote... Harold Massingham has written the strongest lampoon of British diplomacy it has been my pleasure to read. It's astringent wit, and his pen portraits of his seniors and juniors are the funniest things I've read in a long time. Now, Mother, if he didn't mean it that way, he's not as brilliant as I thought he was.
Well, he has a sort of porky wit.
Oh, that's an understatement. He doesn't poke fun at the old striped trouser boys. He annihilates them. What time's dinner?
As soon as Daddy gets back.
Ah, good. And let's hope the great lampoonist gets here soon. I'm dying of hunger. Oh, by the way, I've written a song for our Eskimo hero.
Does he sing in Eskimo, or whatever it is?
Oh, no. It's a song without words.
No words? Then how can it be a song?
Well, there's this scene, you see, all ice and an igloo. And sitting outside the igloo is the lady flyer and our Eskimo hero. And, well, he bursts into song.
Oh, don't be silly. Mummy's right. How can you have a song without words?
He just grunts.
Charles, I know you mean well, but your enthusiasm has been somewhat misplaced.
Tell me, Dad, and this is the crux of the matter, did you intend to write a lampoon or satire, or were you writing a serious history of your time?
I seem to have failed again. Believe it or not, Charles, it was meant to be serious.
Oh, serious or not, sir, it's full of wit and amusing stories. The public will lap it up, but not as a serious work. And that's what my friend Alan says. It doesn't read as a serious work.
Possibly not, but that was my intention. The things that you regard as funny were written with bitterness. I remembered so vividly the indignities and the farce of most of it. I remembered how I wrote prosy and equivocal speeches for my chief and how he was praised for his wonderful use of English. I remember how Hitler bawled him out and Mussolini smirked at him and Stalin pretended not to understand and... Well, they were all wrong. History proved it. But how it hurt at the time. And as I wrote, all that bitterness came back. And I thought of the world today.
Wonderful. That's what you'll say when the great author's being interviewed by the newspaper reporters. You've written a winner, Dad.
I have to thank you and your publisher for opening my eyes. I didn't realize myself what I was doing. I didn't realize that I was using words that would hurt him.
Him?
Sir Benedict. For all his faults, he's a great old man. I realize now that many things I put in my memoirs would hurt him deeply. Thank you for taking so much trouble.
You don't have to thank me.
You see, all the time I was writing, I was driven by something, something inside me. I told more truth than my own enclosed little world would stand.
And diplomacy is the language of the double talk. Sorry, Dan, I shouldn't have said that.
I'm sorry, too. I'd like to have gone down saluting my opponents, as you put it. I think I'll go for a stroll in the garden.
Harold, Charles, I thought...
If you're looking for Dad, he's gone for a stroll in the garden.
Oh, dear, that means he's upset.
I'm afraid he is.
Daddy?
Yes, my child?
Do you mind if I walk with me?
Not a bit. Better still, let's sit on this bench. Yeah. Ah. You've something to say to me?
Yes and no. I saw you walking with your head bent down. Oh, Daddy, you look so dejected.
And beaten?
No, Daddy. You know I didn't mean that. You could never be beaten.
Did Charles tell you that I'm not publishing the book?
No. Oh, Daddy, you must. We're all pinning our hopes on you. Is it because you don't like the way they're going to promote it?
Partly. And partly because of what my memoirs contained. It would seem that I dipped my pen in acid. I didn't mean to poke fun.
Tell me the truth, Daddy. Did you ever want to publish that book?
Fair question, my daughter. I worked on it very hard. Much of the time, I thought I was recapturing and reliving parts of my youth and middle age. I worked very hard at it, my dear.
For what reason? Just to recapture your life?
A life of failure. Perhaps that's it. Perhaps I was working to defeat myself once more.
I see. If this book comes out and flops, that would be a bitter defeat indeed, wouldn't it, Father? I suppose you said to yourself, I know I could do it if I was given the chance, and now you have the chance, you're throwing it away.
Well, don't you see, my dear, that I can't play the part of a hyena at a feast? I can't attack publicly an even older man who can no longer defend himself. Perhaps you're right. The bitterness I put in that book was bitterness of failure. All over the world, there are tens of thousands of men like me. They're less fortunate. They haven't got married children they can go and leech on.
Daddy.
Let me finish. They live in furnished rooms and they starve genteelly. Why? Because they didn't have the necessary drive and quality to succeed. Poor failures like your father.
Daddy, don't talk like that. I didn't mean what I said just now. I wanted to provoke you into doing what you would regard as a dishonorable act. But these successful ones you refuse to expose, do you think any of them care about you? Do you think if you wrote to any of those great figures of history and asked for help...
I understand. A father who never quite made it, and a talented, fine husband who has to write grunting songs for a living instead of symphonies. Don't you think we ought to go in, my dear?
Ah, there you are. Where's your father?
He's gone into the library. Oh, Mummy, I'm afraid. I love him so much, and I said things to him I didn't mean.
Me too. Here, come and sit down.
Oh, Mummy, can't you persuade him?
If your father doesn't want the book to be published, then that settles the matter. I must say, that advance in royalties would come in useful.
You can say that again. Oh, I'll take it. Hello.
Hello, Charles. Is that you?
Uh-huh.
When can we all get together and sign the agreement?
I can't talk to you now, Alan. I'll call in at your office tomorrow and we'll discuss it.
Look, I've shown that manuscript to our senior partner. He's raving about it. He says we're mad to print 5,000 only. He suggests a first printing of 50,000.
Huh?
You can tell your father-in-law we'll be negotiating for newspaper serial rights. He's going to have some trouble with that income tax of his.
He is, is he? Look, Alan, my father-in-law has just come in. Perhaps you'd like a word with him. It's Alan Watts on the line, Dad. They're now offering a 50,000 first print. You better talk to him, please.
Yes, all right.
Hold on, Alan. Here he comes.
Fine.
Hello, Mr. Watts.
Hello, sir. We've decided to give your book the fullest possible promotion. Our senior partner's read it, and he...
Your enthusiasm doesn't stem from the opinion of your senior partner. I, too, have been listening to the news. I heard of his death listening to the wireless as I sat in my library. Goodbye.
Oh, what's all this about? Who's death?
Sir Benedict's. I just heard it on the news.
Oh, the poor, poor old man.
One can only say he lived a very long and useful life.
But he can't be hurt now, can he?
Can't be hurt. There are his colleagues.
Daddy, either your book is true or it's a lie. What is it?
This isn't the moment to ask such a question.
Your father has never told a lie.
Come, Mary. A member of the diplomatic corps.
But that was different and they weren't lying.
I give up. Sally's right. Whether it's published or not, whether there are 50,000, a million, or just one handwritten copy, it's either true or a lie. And if it's true, you've no right to withhold it from the public.
Too simple. In a way, it's a betrayal. Truth can betray.
Daddy, this is your moment of truth. It's them or you. Or rather us. Who are you going to betray?
Can you give me the telephone number of your friend, Alan Watts?
It's there on the pad.
I'm going to publish. Funny thing. Sir Benedict was a dear friend of mine. But until I heard the news of his death on the wireless, I didn't realize that he would be the first to chuckle over the book.
Throughout the world, oil companies have been searching for an answer to oil fatigue. Shell found it. New Shell Super, the oil that stays as good as new from one oil change to the next. New Shell Super, today's best motor oil. For new ideas in action, you can be sure of Shell.
And so ends Diplomatic Venture by Humbert Wilson, with Stuart Brown as Harold Massingham. His wife Mary was played by Patricia Sanders. His son-in-law Charles, Joe Stewartson, and his daughter Sally was played by Annabelle Linder. Diplomatic Venture was adapted and produced by Michael Silver for Shell.